The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing in Chapter 4, The Perfection of the Mental Being, found in Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, mid-page 637. Nevertheless, there is somewhere an absolute control, a real Ishwara. He is aware of it and knows that if he can find it, he will enter into control, become not only the passive sanctioning witness and upholding soul of her will, but the free, powerful user and determiner of her movements. But this control seems to belong to another poise than the mentality. Sometimes he finds himself using it, but as a channel or instrument, it comes to him from above. It is clear, then, that it is a supramental, a power of the spirit greater than mental being, which he already knows himself to be at the summit and in the secret core of his conscious being. To enter into identity with that spirit must then be his way to control and lordship. He can do it passively by a sort of reflection and receiving in his mental consciousness. But then he is only a mold, channel, or instrument, not a possessor or participant in the power. He can arrive at identity by an absorption of his mentality in inner spiritual being. But then the conscious action ceases in a trance of identity. To be active master of the nature, he must evidently rise to some higher supramental poise where there is possible not only a passive, but an active identity with the controlling spirit. To find the way of rising to this greater poise and be self-ruler, swarat, is a condition of his perfection. The difficulty of the ascent is due to a natural ignorance. He is the Purusha, witness of mental and physical nature, Sakshi, but not a complete knower of self and nature, Chantri. Knowledge in the mentality is enlightened by his consciousness. He is the mental knower. But he finds that this is not a real knowledge, but only a partial seeking and partial finding, a derivative uncertain reflection, and narrow utilization for action from a greater light beyond, which is the real knowledge. This light is the self-awareness and all awareness of spirit. The essential self-awareness he can arrive at even on the mental plane of being, by reflection in the soul of mind or by its absorption in spirit, as indeed it can be arrived at by another kind of reflection or absorption in soul of life and soul of body. But for participation in an effective all-awareness with this essential self-awareness as the soul of its action, he must rise to supermind. To be lord of his being, he must be knower of self and nature, Janata Ishvara. Partially, this may be done on a higher level of mind where it responds directly to supermind. But really and completely, this perfection belongs not to the mental being, but to the ideal or knowledge soul. Vijnana Maya Purusha. To draw up the mental into the greater knowledge being, and that into the bliss self of the spirit, Anandamaya Purusha, is the uttermost way of this perfection. But no perfection, much less this perfection, can be attained without a very radical dealing with the present nature and the abrogation of much that seems to be the fixed law of its complex nexus of mental, vital, and physical being. The law of this nexus has been created for a definite and limited end. The temporary maintenance, preservation, possession, aggrandizement, enjoyment, experience, need, action of the mental ego in the living body. Other resultant uses are served. But this is the immediate and fundamentally determining object and utility. To arrive at a higher utility and freer instrumentation, this nexus must be partly broken up, exceeded, transformed into a larger harmony of action. The Purusha sees that the law created is that of a partly stable, partly unstable, selective determination of habitual, yet developing experiences out of a first confused consciousness of self and not self, subjective being and external universe. This determination is managed by mind, life, and body acting upon each other in harmony and correspondence, but also in discord and divergence, mutual interference and limitation. There is a similar mixed harmony and discord between various activities of the mind in itself, as also between activities of the life in itself and of the physical being. The whole is a sort of disorderly order, an order evolved and contrived out of a constantly surrounding and invading confusion. This is the first difficulty the Purusha has to deal with, a mixed and confused action of nature, an action without clear self-knowledge, distinct motive, firm instrumentation, only an attempt at these things and a general relative success of effectuality. A surprising effect of adaptation in some directions, but also much distress of inadequacy. That mixed and confused action has to be mended. Purification is an essential means towards self-perfection. All these impurities and inadequacies result in various kinds of limitation and bondage. But there are two or three primary knots of the bondage. Ego is the principal knot, from which the others derive. These bonds must be got rid of. Purification is not complete till it brings about liberation. Besides, after a certain purification and liberation has been effected, there is still the conversion of the purified instruments to the law of a higher object and utility, a large, real, and perfect order of action. By the conversion, man can arrive at a certain perfection of fullness of being, calm, power, and knowledge, even a greater vital action and more perfect physical existence. One result of this perfection is a large and perfect delight of being, ananda. Thus, purification, liberation, perfection, delight of being are four constituent elements of the yoga. Shuddhi, mukti, siddhi, bhukti. But this perfection cannot be attained or cannot be secure and entire in its largeness if the Purusha lays stress on individuality. To abandon identification with the physical, vital, and mental ego is not enough. He must arrive in soul also at a true universalized not separative individuality. In the lower nature, man is an ego, making a clean cut in conception between himself and all other existence. The ego is to him self, but all the rest not self, external to his being. His whole action starts from and is founded upon this self-conception and world conception. But the conception is, in fact, an error. However sharply he individualizes himself in mental idea and mental or other action, he is inseparable from the universal being, his body from universal force and matter, his life from the universal life, his mind from universal mind, his soul and spirit from universal soul and spirit. The universal acts on him, invades him, overcomes him, shapes itself in him at every moment. He, in his reaction, acts on the universal, invades, tries to impose himself on it, shape it, overcome its attack, rule, and use its instrumentation. This conflict is a rendering of the underlying unity, which assumes the aspect of struggle by a necessity of the original separation. The two pieces into which mind has cut the oneness rush upon each other to restore the oneness, and each tries to seize on and take into itself the separated portion. Universe seems to be always trying to swallow up man, the infinite to resume this finite, which stands on its self-defense and even replies by aggression. But in real fact, the universal being through this apparent struggle is working out its purpose in man. Though the key and truth of the purpose and working is lost to his superficial conscious mind, only held obscurely in an underlying subconscient and only known luminously in an overruling superconscient unity. Man also is impelled towards unity by a constant impulse of extension of his ego, which identifies itself as best it can with other egos and with such portions of the universe as he can physically, vitally, mentally get into his use and possession. As man aims at knowledge and mastery of his own being, so also he aims at knowledge and mastery of the environmental world of nature, its objects, its instrumentation, its beings. First, he tries to effect this aim by egoistic possession, but as he develops, the element of sympathy born of the secret oneness grows in him, and he arrives at the idea of a widening cooperation and oneness with other beings, a harmony with universal nature and universal being. The witness Purusha in the mind observes that the inadequacy of his effort, all the inadequacy in fact of man's life and nature, arises from the separation and the consequent struggle, want of knowledge, want of harmony, want of oneness. It is essential for him to grow out of separative individuality, to universalize himself, to make himself one with the universe. This unification can be done only through the soul, by making our soul of mind one with universal mind, our soul of life one with the universal life soul, our soul of body one with universal soul of physical nature. When this can be done, in proportion to the power, intensity, depth, completeness, permanence with which it can be done, great effects are produced upon the natural action. Especially there grows an immediate and profound sympathy and immixture of mind with mind, life with life, a lessening of the body's insistence on separateness, a power of direct mental and other intercommunication and effective mutual action, which helps out now the inadequate indirect communication and action that was till now the greater part of the conscious means used by embodied mind. But still, the Purusha sees that in mental, vital, physical nature taken by itself, there is always a defect, inadequacy, confused action, due to the mechanically unequal interplay of the three modes or gunas of nature. To transcend it, he has, in the universality too, to rise to the supramental and spiritual, to be one with the supramental soul of cosmos, the universal spirit. He arrives at the larger light and order of a higher principle in himself and the universe, which is the characteristic action of the divine Satchidananda. Even he is able to impose the influence of that light and order, not only on his own natural being, but within the radius and to the extent of the Spirit's action in him, on the world he lives in, on that which is around him. He is Svarat, self-knower, self-ruler. But he begins to be also, through the spiritual oneness and transcendence, Samrat, a knower and master of his environing world of being. In this self-development, the soul finds that it has accomplished, on this line, the object of the whole integral yoga, union with the Supreme in itself and in its universalized individuality. So long as he remains in the world existence, this perfection must radiate out from him, for that is the necessity of his oneness with the universe and its beings. In an influence and action which help all around, who are capable of it, to rise to or advance towards the same perfection. And for the rest, in an influence and action which help, as only the self-ruler and master man can help, in leading the human race forward spiritually towards this consummation and towards some image of a greater divine truth in their personal and communal existence. He becomes a light and power of the truth to which he has climbed, and a means for others' ascension. End of chapter 4, page 642.